The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
Ambitious and committed are nonsense and empty rhetoric, Housing for All is debated in the Dáil. An apology, an acknowledgement and an independent review. What happened when the Women of Honour met the Minister for Defence? And back to the future. Will the Metro Rail Link ever be built? All that and more coming up on tonight's Late Debate. And joining us in studio to debate all of that, we have Paul McCullough, Fianna Fáil TD and Fianna Fáil spokesperson on local government, Ón O'Brien, Sinn Féin spokesperson on housing, Cian O'Callaghan, Social Democrat spokesperson on housing, and Ciara Phelan, political correspondent for the Irish Mirror. We want to hear from you as well, so do get in touch. You can text us on 51551, you can email us on latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebate_rte. Now, homelessness, affordable rent supply, affordable home purchases, cost rental, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. But is Housing for All the answer to all of Ireland's housing woes? Today, Dara O'Brien's ambitious plan was debated on the floor of the Dáil. Here's just a flavour of what the Minister had to say.
The housing system is complex. The scale of the crisis is international. There is no silver bullet, and I cannot tell you that it will be fixed overnight. However, we have the solutions, the ability, the drive, determination to make a real impact, and we have a plan that is fully financed. The opposition do need to reflect on this, Alaska and Corla, on what they're offering beyond soundbites, hypocrisy and ideological dead ends.
Now, in the great bingo game of housing soundbites, did any of you have no silver bullet and housing can't be built overnight, people? Housing can be built overnight, a particularly popular one over the years of this housing crisis. Just take a listen to how long we're being told that houses can't be built overnight.
I got my mind set on you. I got my mind set on you. But it's gonna take money.
Find ourselves building 6,500 or 8,000 when we need 25,000 to 30,000, and of course the situation is that they can't be provided overnight.
It's gonna take time, whole lot of precious time.
The issue really is prompted by the supply side problem at the moment, and there is a supply side problem, and unfortunately it's not a problem that can be resolved overnight. It takes time.
I got my mind set on you.
You know, everybody wants more social housing in the system. Okay, nobody wants it more than I do. But you simply can't build houses overnight.
I got my mind set on you.
Deputy Boyd Barrett seems to think that it's possible to provide housing solutions for everyone on the housing list overnight.
I got my mind set on you.
Some people want people to believe that this crisis, which is more than a decade in the making, could be solved in the 16 months since I came into office. They want people to believe that if they were in government, this crisis would be solved overnight.
It's gonna take time, all our precious time. It's gonna take patience and time.
Yeah, apparently you can't build houses overnight and you can't solve the problem overnight. It's been a lot of nights since we started telling people we can't solve the problem overnight, Paul McCullough.
It has, yeah. And I think what was clear in the general election in 2020 was that people said they wanted housing to be done differently in the country, that the previous government's reliance of leaning into the market for solutions wasn't working, and they wanted a more ambitious public housing programme. And I think that's what Housing for All is. And both the Land Development Agency Bill and the Affordable Housing Bill, two really significant pieces of legislation that have been passed, provide much of the framework that I think will shape housing policy going into the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years. Will any of that be done before the next general election? In some cases, it doesn't matter for the country, because what we need...
It matters for Fianna Fáil.
It does matter for Fianna Fáil, but like, we can't put Fianna Fáil's... we can't have too much short-term thinking that would then significantly change the long-term direction. And that's what we need. It's about long-term public housing.
OK, let's just say... And I should say, of course, we did invite Minister Dara O'Brien on tonight's programme, because I know he said he's happy to debate housing policy with Ón O'Brien any time, but he wasn't available. But we are delighted to have you, Paul McCullough.
Thanks for making me feel like the substitute there, Kate.
We'd never make you feel like a substitute. We're always delighted to have you, and I mean that, Paul. It struck me there listening to the minister today that it's not the first time he spoke about this being an international problem. This isn't just an Irish problem. And, you know, and I know other people picked up on this as well. It's not the first time that a Fianna Fáil minister has blamed an international crisis for a national emergency. Do you think that was a wise tack to take?
I didn't hear the minister's comment say, but I heard some of the opposition spokespeople use it. The minister knows that there's unique problems in Ireland that need to be addressed to solve the housing crisis. The minister knows there's a housing crisis. He's not in denial. He's not trying to normalise homelessness. He's not trying to normalise the crisis that we have. And suggestions by the opposition that that's what he's doing, I think, aren't correct. And I go back to the plan, like, it's all there in black and white. We are literally pushing every lever that we can to try and secure supply and to deliver solutions for every point in the spectrum. And okay, that's what makes it different than the previous government's plan. It's not more of the same. It is different.
OK, we'll come back to that in a second. OK, it's not more of the same, Owen. They're pushing every lever they can.
Sure, and listening to the minister today, I did have that terrible sense of deja vu that many of the kind of rhetorical flourishes that he used, not just the ones that you've highlighted, but many of the others were used by Owen Murphy, were used by Simon Coveney, were used by Alan Kelly, etc. And the difficulty you see is when you pare back a lot of the padding in the very lengthy 160-page plan and you look at the actual numbers, it is broadly in line with where things were at before. So, for example, Fine Gael had promised us under the National Development Plan that every year over the next 5 years we'd have 10,000 real social houses built or bought by local authorities and approved housing bodies. This plan will give us 9,000. We were told by Fine Gael that we would have over 6,000 affordable homes delivered in 2019, 20 and 21 through two schemes. They were never delivered, but a similar figure is being proposed over the next 3 years under this plan. Likewise, the measures on renters are appallingly weak. Likewise, the level of direct intervention, for example, to get people out of homelessness, are roughly in line with what's been there before. So the rhetoric is different. But crucially, both the targets and the level of capital spend that we're going to see announced in the budget, not the inflated figures are in this document, but the actual voted capital expenditure that we will see come budget day on the basis of the targets that are in the plan, are broadly in line with what Fine Gael would have done otherwise. And the problem is...
But have we not hugely expanded the amount of money that's going to be poured into
this? No. So, and you see, this is one of the concerning things. So there's a figure of $4 billion an annual spend each year.
Which
right?
is what the SRI recommended and which, it is. Know, as I understood it, the government had accepted.
Exactly. But that's not actually what's going to be in the voted expenditure. So what they've done in the messaging for this plan, which hadn't been done, for example, in Simon Coveney's plan, is that in addition to the capital expenditure to be voted on by government, which we won't get to see until budget day, but it's not going to be significantly above what was allocated for this year, they've counted in the borrowings of the approved housing bodies. But the approved housing bodies borrow about the same amount of money each year. They're going to borrow about €1 billion next year. They borrowed about €1 billion this year, a little bit less last year. So what they're doing is to get to that €4 billion figure, to say we've met what the SRI have called for, they're now counting stuff that they didn't previously. What really matters with a government housing plan is on budget day, the government announces how much direct capital investment. This year it's €1.4 billion. I suspect what we'll see come budget day in terms of direct delivery of social and affordable homes by state agencies and their surrogates will be a couple of €100 million more than that, nowhere close to the claim of €4 billion that's in the plan. That's just fictional money in terms of how it's been presented. And that's why the targets are so appallingly low.
Okay. Cian O'Callaghan, you were, I thought, pretty positive when you spoke on this in the Dáil this evening.
I wouldn't say I was positive about this. What I did try and do, because it had descended into really, I thought, a bit of a farce between government and some of the opposition parties just slagging each other back. So I was trying to be constructive in what I was saying. I wouldn't be terribly positive about the plan. I did acknowledge that a lot of work has gone into it from the minister and his officials. And there are some ideas in it that are quite good. In you know, for example, we'd been for a long time saying the Fair Deal scheme needs to be reformed. It is. So there's some easy wins in the plan like that. But the fundamentals on it in terms of, you know, what the previous governments have done have been very reliant on giving subsidies to private developers and hoping for the best. And that's actually just pushed up prices. And this plan reinforces that. There's effectively about €1 billion or so earmarked in this plan in you know, new subsidies for developers, including the shared equity scheme, which the Central Bank and ESRI have been extremely critical of and said it will push up prices. And it's kind of like the government don't realise that by those sorts of measures that turbocharge price increases are making the situation worse. They're making house prices go up. They're making rents go up. That's part of the reason that we've got the most expensive house prices and rents in the European Union. And those same policies being repeated really aren't going to work, and throwing more money at those kind of subsidies for developers is really the wrong approach. It's not helpful. We should be building more social, cost rental, affordable purchase homes directly rather than more subsidies for developers.
Okay, I want to bring Ciara in a moment. I just want, we got an email in there saying Fianna Fáil are deluded if they think anyone accepts their investor-led strategy, which is designed to deny citizens the most basic right to their own home at a fair price. Talking about prices, the minister today saying, you know, we're talking obviously about those figures over the last couple of days, 9% rise in asking prices. And I can tell you from personal experience, the asking price is not within an ass's roar of what actually is being paid for houses and what houses are changing hands for now. I'm hearing 15, 20% over asking in many parts of Dublin, at least. So would you agree with that, Paul, that with the minister, where he says that housing prices is not, or the housing market is not out of control?
Well, look, I think we've had 10 years of a lack of supply, and then we've capped that off in the last 18 months by not having the construction market being able to operate because of shutdown. So the idea that we're not in a period where restricted supply has impacting supply just wouldn't be factually correct. So there is issues that are affecting. Some economists are saying it's a micro bubble, but look.
Certainly, if you're out there, I can tell you it really feels like the Wild West right now.
Yeah. No, look, I wouldn't use that term, but prices are increasing, and the only way we're going to resolve that is by supply.
But is it helpful if the minister stands up in the Dáil and says that he doesn't accept that the housing market is out of control?
But look, I think the minister knows the problems in the market. That's why Housing for All.
But then why deny the reality that people feel know if they're actually out there trying to?
I don't think he is denying it. Like the minister would have been the chief campaigners for increasing supply, chief critics of the previous government. The minister knows how bad this is. Every Fianna Fáil, Green Party, Sinn Féin, Labour, TD knows how bad this problem is. So there's no one pretending to paper over it. The difficulty is that the very significant architect, Owen talks about numbers being the same, but he's not being fair about what actually has changed. The policy of delivering housing is different.
Can you respond to that very specific point that we're you know, messing around with numbers here, and that actually we're putting $1 billion in that wouldn't have been counted in previous plans, and that's why it looks like there's a massive explosion in spending when actually it's much more modest?
Okay, so the $4 billion is broken up of $2.4 billion in the direct exchequer. I think there's $1 billion with the Housing Finance Agency, and there's about 0.7 from.
Do you accept that there's money being counted now that wasn't included when we spoke about these issues previously?
I don't know, because I wouldn't have discussed these issues previously. But the point is that there will be €4 billion that's available. It is a €20 billion multi-annual package. And we can't paper over the importance of that, because the approved housing bodies have told me, and I'm sure they've said it to other ones, that provides huge security. That provides a pipeline for them knowing that they can develop public housing on the public land.
Okay. Let me bring in Ciara. Ciara, how are you?
Good. How are you? I'm listening to all that there, Katie. And we're throwing billions of euro left, right and centre. But to be quite honest with you, people are sick of listening to hear about the money and just want to see some action now.
I'm thinking about you, and I know you've spoken before about the fact that you're renting, and you're looking at renting, looking down the barrel at renting for a very, very long time.
Yeah, I've been renting since I think since I was about 17. Definitely, you know, all through college. I'm obviously renting in Dublin now with three others, and it's so even if you go on Daft and you try look at, you know, somewhere else to move, maybe outside of Dublin a little bit, or, you know, I'm originally from Carlow. If you look, I just went on Daft this evening and there's very few properties to rent, let alone buy. So, you know, I hear Paul there speaking and the minister today about, you know, we're pushing every lever that we can, but I don't think people are believing that, because we've seen that, you know, the housing minister announced a plan to tie rent increases to inflation. That plan has backfired. We've seen inflation at 3%. Now, he did say in the Dáil this evening that he is looking at what he can do to put a cap on that. But at the end of the day, we're speaking about supply, but we need to speak about affordability. Mm. And I know there has been calls from the opposition parties about, you know, rent freezes, but the government, you know, have put off, and they did earlier this month, looking at a vacant, well, they're saying that they're collecting the data for a vacant property tax. But if they had done that in advance of this Housing for All plan, I can imagine that renters wouldn't be struggling as much. There would be more supply on the market for people to move into homes, to get mortgages, and it might decrease rent prices. But as we've seen from all the recent reports, that rent is going up. We see it's going up outside of Dublin because people are staying at home, and it's just, it's a vicious circle for renters and for young people in particular, who are, you know, may have received pay cuts due to the pandemic. It's just never ending.
Yeah, Cian, I saw you tweeting earlier this week about you had a look at the lobbying register. What did it tell you?
Well, I just put in a freedom of information request about the minister's meetings between January and March. And in that, for example, there was six meetings that he had with the Irish Home Builders Association. And I was just comparing that to the amount of time he spent in the Dáil on scrutiny on his affordable housing bill. There was 3 hours and 15 minutes in total for committee and remaining stages on that. And there were six different meetings with the Irish Home Builders Association alone in those 3 months, and then also with other lobbyists and other developers at the time when the minister was, you know, drawing up the plans for Housing for All and on his affordable housing bill. So I've no issue with a meeting with developers.
I was just going to say, surely this is how you develop policy.
My issue is with the amount of time and the amount of engagement compared to other engagement. You know, and if you keep listening to the same voices, your policies are going to reflect those voices. And you can see that in the Housing for All plan. I mean, the big winners from Housing for All are the developers. They get more of the spend than anyone else, against all of the advice from all the independent experts. You know, there's 20 more housing first tenancies for people who really need them, who are experiencing homelessness, 20 additional over what was previously committed. And there's about $1 billion we're looking at, you know, subsidies for developers. I don't see how that is in any way defensible or why the government have gone down that route, especially the likes of the Housing for All tenancies. There's absolute agreement across the political spectrum that that works, that it's a really effective measure. And so I don't know why the government haven't put more into that, for example.
This is a criticism that has come up more than once, that the minister seems to be very alert to the difficulties that developers and the funds and all of those players in this market have with every tweak of policy, to the degree that, you know, everything is tweaked to give them greater comfort.
I'm surprised, Akeen, and I'm actually going to whack and look at that information myself. Keane is comparing two things there. He's not saying that the minister didn't meet approved housing bodies, that he didn't meet all of the agencies that are involved in the engagement of homelessness and so on. He's not comparing those two different categories. I would hazard a guess, and I don't have the figures for me, that the minister spent far more time dealing with the approved housing agencies, the voluntary housing bodies, those people working in homelessness, than he did with any developer, Katie. And to be fair, and with great respect, Cian, that's an incredibly disingenuous thing to apply. You're trying to apply a narrative of us being in bed with the developers. It might work politically for you, but it's just cheap politics. The reality is, Katie, and let's be very clear, there's significant changes in the last 12 months in housing, and I've said it over and over, and I'll just give you some examples of it, right? So the Rebuilding Ireland, which was the Fine Gael's policy, wanted a scaled back land development agency. We have gone for a much more powerful land development agency. The previous government for the last 10 years talked about cost rental, including Labour for 5 years in government. No legislation on cost rental, no Vienna housing model. In 12 months, we introduced that. Previous government introduced SHDs, we abolished SHDs. Previous government introduced co-housing, we abolished co-housing. There's very significant changes that are different from previous. Of course, they're going to take time. The public know that they're going to take time.
OK, Owen.
Yeah, so the difficulty is, if you look at a number of key policy interventions by Darragh O'Brien, it's very clear that he is disproportionately listening to large developers and institutional investors. So, for example, no political party campaigned during the general election to introduce a shared equity loan scheme, that very controversial additional debt on working families that has increased house prices in London by 9% and not increased any supply. Yet, lo and behold, two developer organisations come, lobby parties after the general election, and I know because I met them like I meet everybody else, but Darragh O'Brien introduced that into the budget against the advice of officials from the Department of Public Expenditure Reform and a whole range of other people. Likewise, when people were rightly angered following Mullen Park of institutional investors bulk buying homes, Darragh O'Brien at the last minute asked for an exemption from the increased stamp duty tax if the institutional investors were buying houses and duplexes to lease them long term back to the local authority. In my own local authority, we've had almost 70 of those long term leases just in the last 4 or 5 weeks. And the Part 5 of the Planning Development Act is a really good example. Darragh O'Brien has made a great play about they've increased the Part 5 of the Planning Development Act from 10% to 20%, and that would be an extra 10% affordable. And he said, on foot of advice from the housing agency, he decided to give an exemption to landowners until 2026. We forced the department to release the housing agency report. It's 70 pages. It's very detailed. It doesn't recommend any course of action. It outlines 4 options, one of which was what Fianna Fáil did when they first introduced Part 5, which is just a fair compensation regime for landowners. That would have been the best option because we would have got more affordable houses now. Landowners didn't want it. So the most pro-developer proposition is what has been pursued. And here's the other thing. What do people want to know? People want to know this year, next year and the year after, how many genuinely affordable homes will be delivered by this government to rent or buy. The latest figures I've got from the Department of Housing this week say, this year, how many affordable homes to purchase through
government funded scheme? Do you know, even before you answer that, what is an affordable home?
So, and what's really important
is... that's not defined in Housing for All.
Well, the Minister's been very clear what he believes is affordable. But
a discount on the going market rate.
No, he said that on public land, the council should be building homes between 160 and 310,000, depending on bedroom size. That's what the Minister says. That's one of the main planks of our programme, is the council's building affordable housing, like they did 10 years ago when we were in government and was scrapped by Fine Gael and Labour.
So, first of all, 10 years ago, Fianna Fáil didn't build any affordable homes. They gave people access to high levels of debt through shared ownership schemes to buy overpriced homes, but that's a separate issue. The question is, under the two government schemes for affordable purchase through local authorities and cost rental, how many will be delivered this year? To purchase, by the end of the year, the answer is 8. 8 affordable purchase
in 2021.
For affordable cost rental, the Minister did announce a new initiative and he wanted to deliver 390 affordable cost rental homes this year. They're only going to deliver 190, half of what
was promised. We only voted for in July.
No. This was money that was budgeted for last October and the Minister said the AHBs would deliver those homes through purchase this year. Here's the other problem. If you scrape away at this housing plan, how many genuinely affordable homes to rent or buy are targeted for next year through these two government schemes? A total of 2,000. Now, if they only delivered 8 affordable purchases and 190 affordable rentals this year, how in God's name does anybody think they're going to deliver 2,000? And even if they did deliver 2,000 next year, that's nowhere close to what's required.
Yeah, and I saw you nodding when Ciara mentioned earlier, you know, people just aren't buying that is going to work. And, you know, when you put it in those dark terms, you think, God, really?
Also,
do you really believe we're going to deliver 2,000 affordable homes next year?
I do, but because I've seen the legislation, I've seen the different approach, but I don't think people out there accept that there has been a change, and I think that's a big communication exercise we have to do. But Ciara did say that people want action now, and yet the very measure that we have that is a short-term measure and we do not believe is a priority is the shared equity scheme. Owen is criticising.
It's not just Owen that's criticising that, to be fair, Paul. That has been criticised by just about every agency and body, including Robert Watt, and including councillors, and including the housing agency, and including the ESRI, and including the Central Bank.
I would dispute some of those with you, but let me say, every year...
One of those would you dispute? Because I saw a report on that.
The ESRI said that it may increase it if it wasn't implemented correctly. That's exactly what the ESRI said. But let me be clear. In the North, Sinn Féin each year champion the co-ownership model. Okay? The co-ownership model, slightly different governance structure where an approved housing agency owns the 20% equity, but it does the same thing. It increases the borrowing power of buyers. So it does exactly this, has the same macro impact that our shared equity scheme has. And year after year, Sinn Féin ministers champion more money for a shared equity scheme. So Owen just isn't being fair. And I know it's a different scheme, Owen. It is a different scheme, but it has the same macro purpose.
We have discussed this, I don't know how many times in the studio over the last number of months. And you cannot get away from the fact that you have had very serious bodies who have looked at it and have urged huge caution around it.
Yes.
And the minister at every turn has driven through that and insisted he's going ahead with it.
That's why we've put regional price caps in. That's why we've restricted it to new build and not having it in second hand, which where was the issue in the UK.
Why in God's name would you go ahead with a policy like that when the market is as hot as it is, which was just putting...
Because at the moment,
impossible to imagine how that can possibly do anything other than drive up house prices.
Well, it also can unlock the 40,000 planning applications that are not being activated. That's the first thing. But the second thing is that because €450,000...
How many schemes now have we been... How many times have we heard over the last number of years about unlocking planning applications? Surely didn't we learn from...
But Katie, do you believe 450,000 is an affordable home?
From the strategic
planning...
But
I'm asking a question. Do you believe 450,000 is an affordable home in Dublin?
Nobody does.
Is it right that the government takes measures in the short term while the long term measures are coming in place to try and ameliorate that?
Can I let Keane?
Because Paul is talking about the need for action, and the big idea that the Minister for Housing had was the shared equity scheme.
No.
That there was going to be action on. Well, it's the big new idea that he has, and we're 18 months since the election, and there still isn't a single home even delivered under that scheme. Now, I don't agree with it, but if that's the idea of action and delivery, it's not exactly working out, is
it? So let's be clear, you didn't even vote for it. You voted
absolutely
against the affordable housing bill. At least Owen had the sense to vote for it.
Don't agree with the shared equity scheme. All the evidence is it's going to push up house prices. In fact, the people lobbying for it were doing it at a time when there's a bit of stagnation in house price inflation at that time because we were coming into COVID. The idea of bringing it in now when things are so overheated goes against any logic at all. But really what we should be doing is building affordable homes like O'Coolan have done, but we need to be doing thousands
of
those.
If you had read the Affordable House Bill you voted against, you'd know it allows for
affordable
public homes built by the councils, built by the approved housing bodies. That's in the legislation.
Kira, were you at that debate today? Or were you watching that debate?
I was watching bits and pieces of it, Katie, yeah.
Yeah, was there any sense that it was getting us anywhere?
No, and to be quite honest with you, the Housing for All plan was announced like a couple of weeks ago, and like, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the first, you know, real debate that we've had on it in the Dáil, and we've been speaking about it for weeks. And I think, you know, since the launch of the Housing for All plan, the Housing Minister and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have actually just been defending it left, right and centre. I mean, like, the plan, I was at the press conference myself for the Housing for All plan, and within hours we had, you know, housing policy analysts, and I know of course opposition would come out and criticise it, and it hasn't really been positive at all. And, you know, as the saying goes, if you're explaining, you know, you're losing on this. And, you know, I just think, you know, we're speaking about, you know, X and Y scheme, but at the end of the day, and I'll go back to the points actually that were made by Sinn Féin's TD Thomas Gould in the Dáil. He said 9,000 vacant derelict houses. It took 2.5 hours to walk one area in Cork. He asked Housing Minister Dara O'Brien to come down and see them. You know, another issue as well that didn't happen during the debate this evening, but it was mentioned earlier on during leaders' questions, was Clare Independent TD Michael McNamara saying, you know, 3,500 apprentices delayed. We all know there has been a decrease in construction and increase in building materials. So it's what the government are going to do in the short term. And I know we've spoken about renting there in the beginning, but that's the issue at the moment with, you know, saving renters in the market and getting saving them essentially until, you know, more supply comes on. And I just think with the vacant property tax and as well, like I mentioned, with the increase in rent prices linked to inflation, the question you asked is, does it seem we're getting anywhere? No.
Yeah. The rent issue is such a huge... I mean, it was, I suppose, encapsulated by the student rent crisis that blew up, you know, there over the last couple of weeks. But of course, it was bubbling away for months, and students have been, you know, desperately trying to sort themselves out for months and months. But like, even if you froze rents tomorrow, like, you would be freezing them at such an unsustainable level that, like, it would take a decade or more of for wage increases to in any way catch up to make living in rental accommodation a manageable prospect for any length of time. Yep. I mean, the scale of this issue is
and that's why you need long-term policies that are going to make a difference over time. And that's what the cost rental model is. We hope that will be the predominant model in the market where housing is delivered and it's affordable.
But Paul, sorry for cutting across you there, but the matter is that right now there are students across the country who are deferring their college courses. There are students across the country sleeping on friends' sofas and actually paying extortionate money and getting their parents to pay extortionate money to stay in hotels. We heard over on the radio during the week, I think it was on Drive Time yesterday, about UCC setting up a food bank because students are struggling to pay rents and their parents are impacted by the pandemic and they can't afford rent and food as well. And we heard from Penny Dinners, the Cork charity.
Katrina Toomey.
Yeah, the charity there saying, you know, some students come in don't want to tell their parents and they want them to. It's just, I understand what you're saying about, you know, long term plans, but the issue is so bad right now.
Yeah, the boat is sinking.
What's it going to take?
Many,
you know,
of us have been given, and not just in the opposition, right?
Yes, Owner Brent.
But also many, many other organisations has been ignored for so long. So, for example, we do need a ban on rent increases. But Katie, you're absolutely right. That freezes rents at a very high level. So we also need to find ways of bringing rents down. And the quickest and legally simplest way is a refundable tax credit to effectively reduce rents by about 8.5%. You could do that straight away. Fianna Fáil had a proposal not unlike ours when they were campaigning the general election that hasn't been translated into policy. So that would actually give average renters about €1,500 a year back into their pockets and stop rent increases. Likewise,
and there wouldn't be any constitutional or property issues.
It's just the quickest way to do it for an emergency.
Yeah.
Likewise, for example, with student accommodation. Now, I know the Minister has issued a circular in terms of change of use from high-end student accommodation to a tourism product. The difficulty, however, is even with that, much of that student accommodation is just far too expensive. One of the reasons why the owners of that accommodation are actually looking for change of use to tourism is because students can't afford it. And where I disagree with Paul is, yes, we need long-term plans, but we also need immediate emergency actions to tackle the roughest edges of the crisis. And therefore, there is a whole host of things that could be done, both on the student accommodation front, on the private rental front. But also, if you take vacancies, we know from geodirectories, there's about 90,000 genuinely vacant and derelict properties across the state. We had a plan under Rebuilding Ireland to bring about 6,000 of those back into use. We've only had a fraction of that. Again, if you look at the actual targets in this plan.
Can anyone tell me why that isn't been done? Again, we hear it talked about ad nauseam.
Fair Deal scheme is a big part of that, and the changes to the Fair Deal scheme will address some of that.
But changes to the Fair Deal scheme haven't happened yet, right? No. Whereas today, in every town, in every village, in every urban centre, there are thousands of properties. What hasn't happened is local authorities haven't been given the capital and we haven't had the adequate reform of the compulsory purchase orders to allow them to do this on scale. If government said, see all of the new public housing that we're going to build, I'd like to see 20,000 social affordable homes annually delivered. 25% of those have to be from vacant or derelict stock. It's quicker to get them up and running. It is cheaper. It's more in line with our emissions reduction targets. And it also gets us over some of the short-term problems we've had because of Brexit and COVID, which is turning supply around quickly. You can acquire and refurb and tenant for social or affordable homes, a vacant or derelict, in 9 to 12 months. To build an equivalent unit can take you 2 to 3 years, depending. So why aren't we...
That's why the Croí Cónaithe Fund in the Housing Roadmap specifically targets those derelicts.
The problem is, that's grant aid is going to be another form of grant aid to private developers. What I'm talking about is resourcing our not-for-profit public authorities to go out now on scale and acquire and refurb and sell or rent affordably or rent socially. That is not what's in this plan. The targets you have for direct public delivery of vacant and derelict homes for social and affordable use is tiny. It's a few hundred each year. It's not a serious or credible target.
Can I ask you another issue that came up this week? I was reading Mel Reynolds' comments at that conference yesterday. This idea that why is the government or why are local authorities putting together more parcels of land when they have huge tracts of public land that they haven't used for building public houses on? Why are we doing that? Have you any sense of what's happening?
Look, I suppose it will differ in different local authorities. So in some places there'll be land available, and for example in Dublin City we have a small amount of land and we need to have been given the tools to do that, and that's what our Housing for All does. It gives the local authorities the tools and the resources and the capacity to deliver on those sites. But in other places there will be a need for housing outside of towns and villages. I suppose that will differ across the country, Katie. So we have to allow some discretion. We have to allow each local authority build and plan their own towns.
Okay, I'll just give you a few because we are getting a lot of texts in on all the issues we're talking about. Is anybody in government or in opposition considering the spiralling cost of building materials and the shortage of skilled workers in the building sector when making promises on the number of houses that are going to be built? That's from Kieran in Limerick. I'll come back to you on that. Katie, will you ask your panel when building's going to start rather than urban sprawl, which is unsustainable? No high rise in this country, it's mad. Ribbon development is unsustainable. That's from Mick in Tullamore. We have another one in there about student accommodation. Student accommodation built to rent by investment funds, hotels, holiday parks, no problem. Social and really affordable housing, forget it. 500,000 priced houses and upwards, out of reach for the majority. And I have a tweet here from Maggie. My blood is boiling here, says Maggie. Paul McAuliffe insisting shared equity scheme will not increase house prices. It's basic economics, Paul. It defies logic, and I despair that my adult children will never afford a home of their own. There's just an air of despair, and I know I've seen this now. And when we discuss this now, there is a sense of resignation out there now that this is just gone away from us. And, you know, my generation and my children's generation are going to be lost.
But government can't think like that. TDs who put themselves before the people to get elected can't think like that. We have to believe that we can fix this, and we can do that by putting the policies in place that have a long-term impact and that try and address the short-term issues without overheating, without having that disproportionate short-term effect. Like, long-term policies are the only way that this is going to be resolved. And all I can say to people is, Fianna Fáil has a long track record of building homes, and that is exactly what we intend to do for this 4 or 5 years that we have in government.
I'm sorry, right? But if you read any of the established histories of public house building in this state, what they will tell you is a number of governments, both Fianna Fáil, Coalition, had a decent track record in the 30s, but then Fianna Fáil cut the budgets in the 40s. They improved in the 50s, but the budgets were cut in the 60s. They improved in the 70s. And then since the 90s, every government, whether led by Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, has built virtually no social housing in comparison to the level of need that's out there. In fact, what has predominated housing policy since the early 1990s under every government is an idea that rather than the state directly being involved in the provision of housing like we were in the 70s and the 60s and the 40s and the 30s, that the private sector would predominate. That is the model that continues today. And here's the problem, right? Because I agree with one thing Paul says. We have to give people hope that this problem can be fixed. But if you do what Darragh O'Brien did today, overpromise to such an extent, right, at a time when the housing crisis is spiralling out of control, what that's going to do is, because people heard Simon Coveney do that and it didn't deliver, they heard Owen Murphy do that and it didn't deliver, they're going to see this government promising it and it won't deliver, and people's despair will get worse.
But over-promising? You're proposing 20,000 when we're actually only delivering 18?
Yeah, I was just going to say, Owen, it was exactly on my mind as before Paul said it. Your housing policy that you put forward before the last election would have promised more.
Absolutely.
Sooner,
and in fact,
faster, bigger.
Interestingly, the 20,000 public homes that our system needs every year was also promised by Fianna Fáil in their general election manifesto. Exactly the same number. The big difference
is, if you were in government, you would have faced the same challenges. Skill shortages, materials, planning issues.
And if you don't interrupt, I'm quite happy to explain how we would deal with all of those in the way we've advised you to do. One of the problems we've had in the last year is new house construction has slowed down. In the first instance, because of COVID closing sites, that's completely understandable. And on the public side, because public procurement is so cumbersome that local authorities are really struggling with large projects. That is why at least 25% of all public housing shouldn't be new built. It should be buying, refurbing and letting out within 12-month periods of time the vacant stock that's already built. Because the great thing about vacant homes is that you don't have to get planning permission from the start. You don't have to get all the materials.
Okay. You need less. But you also promised a huge amount of home building and social and affordable.
Absolutely.
But how come that's not over-promising when it's in a Sinn Féin document?
Because the difference between what we're saying and what the government is saying is we would match the targets with direct capital investment by government to deliver those homes. The overwhelming majority of the homes that are promised in this document will not come from direct capital investment by government through local authorities, approved housing bodies and others. It is a continuation of the over-reliance on the private sector. Social. And the one thing we know from Rebuilding Ireland is government cannot predict what the private sector will or won't do. It can only decide what it will invest, what it will build, buy, refurb and let out.
OK, I'll just say one thing on that tax credit idea for rent. The refundable tax credit for rent is a great idea, says one texter. But will landlords not just increase the rent knowing tenants are getting a tax credit?
No, because we'll couple it with a 3-year ban on rent increases. And that's why we do those two things together.
Well, I know we started with that without the referendum.
Because you don't need a referendum on it. Your Attorney General is wrong. And there are many more eminent scholars.
And that's the problem, Katie, with a lot of the proposals.
They say there's
a need for a referendum on the right to housing.
We do, but
then
not,
they criticise us when we can't take the measures that would allow.
This is a really important point.
But did we not bring in a rent when we realised that when we had it was proportionate? Wasn't that the word we needed to find?
Yeah absolutely.
But it's not proportionate now. This is not crisis enough, you think, for a constitutional...
We're advised that a ban wouldn't be proportionate.
Katie, can I just say, some of the country's leading constitutional law experts who know more about this than the current Attorney General say if you did it for an emergency 3-year period precisely because of the high level of rents that it would be constitutional and therefore I think
then why do we need the amendment?
Because we want to do other things but for the 3-year ban on rent increases
you can't have it both ways on. You can't need the amendment to take more intervention and then criticise us for not taking greater intervention.
But you're not going to have a referendum
we need a referendum in order to have a ban on rent increases.
Exactly.
Well actually the Attorney General has.
The Attorney General is wrong.
And there's lots of people who say, legal experts who are on the record saying that you can take, that the Dáil and the elected legislator can take proportionate action on things like housing if it's a need and that the courts will recognise that the legislator can do that and that the legislator is within its rights to do that.
OK, I'll just give you the last word, Ciara, before we leave housing. You're from Carlow, right?
Yeah.
Could you buy a house in Carlow if you were inclined to commute?
Well, I was looking. I wouldn't be able to commute anyway because of my job. As you know yourself, as a reporter, you have to be there at the hop under the doorstep. So it's not feasible for me. But I think I'm on a good wage. But I'm also looking at the housing market in Carlow, and it's unrealistic, you know. And you know, we talk about the schemes and then you look at how much you're entitled to get from the bank. It just wouldn't happen for me if I was to buy a loan by myself, Katie. It's unrealistic. So I can't imagine, you know, for people as well who are on, you know, a lot of people will be on €35,000, you know, around that wage as well. So I can't imagine what people that are on less wage than me are looking at trying to buy homes as well outside of Dublin, you know.
Single people is a key issue, Katie, and it's one of the reasons why Housing for All increases the council loans for single people from 50,000 up to 65.
Okay, we're going to have to leave that there. We'll take a break, but after this we'll be talking to Karina Malloy.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. I'm joined tonight by journalist Ciara Phelan, along with deputies Paul McAuliffe of Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin's Eoin Óibrén and Cian O'Callaghan of the Social Democrats. Now, today, Defence Minister Simon Coveney pledged to the Women of Honour that issues they raised about systemic discrimination and sexual abuse in the Defence Forces will be urgently addressed through an independent review. The Women of Honour are a group of former and serving female Defence Force members who recounted multiple stories of sexism, harassment, bullying and sexual assault to me for a documentary that was broadcast just over 2 weeks ago. And one of those women is retired Quartermaster Sergeant Karina Malloy. Karina, you're very welcome to the Late Debate.
Thanks very much, Katie, for having me on.
You were at that meeting with Simon Coveney today, Karina. How did it go? First of all, how long did it last? How much time did he give you?
He actually gave us just under 2 hours, which we were very, very impressed with, because his meeting with the serving females before us ran over time, so we didn't expect him to stay longer than an hour with us, as we were told that he would only have an hour for us, but he actually stayed 2 hours.
Was it very emotional?
No, actually, he was a bit emotional after coming out of the other meeting because of the stories, the horror stories that he was told in that meeting. We had a few little emotional outbursts in our own meeting, But then we were very, very focused on demanding what we wanted.
And what did he say that he had heard from the serving female members, Karina?
Well, he didn't, and rightly so, didn't go into any great detail, but he just did say that he was horrified to hear that the abuse is still ongoing. That was his realization. He said that he freely admitted that he took the reviews and the information that he got from the department, from the Defence Forces, whenever he asked for the reports as to how sexual abuse and sexual offences are being dealt with, and they gave statistics saying that everything is fine, and he admitted that what was he supposed to do? He's supposed to believe the reports that lands on his desk. And then he realised, well, in reality, this isn't the case because of what he heard today and what the Secretary General told him from last week's meeting, that this is still ongoing and that he has to do something about it.
Yeah, but of course we knew this wasn't historic cases, because even in our documentary, of course, we had Kira, whose career had ended in very traumatic circumstances after sustained harassment, and that was in very recent years. So I suppose this question of why this would come as a shock to the minister at this stage, but he did give you the two A's that you spoke about in the documentary, Karina.
Yes, he did say that he will absolutely give an apology. That he said I'm apologising now to you ladies, and another apology will be forthcoming. He didn't say where and when the location or the time would be, and that absolutely that he acknowledges that this has happened to us, and it's, as he heard today, that it is still happening, and that he doesn't have any problem whatsoever giving a public apology.
And the review. Are we calling it a review or an inquiry?
He's calling it a review. That was the word that was used today. An external independent review.
And external, of course, is hugely important for you and the others in Women of Honour.
Oh yes, absolutely. We weren't going to accept anything else but that word to be attached to the other two words, independent review. We definitely needed to be an external review. And he totally agreed to this, and there was a few names thrown into the pot already, and he actually took our the names that we threw in. He wrote them down and will be taken into consideration, which I was very, very surprised with, considering one name that I put in the pot, but of course I can't mention it. But he took it on. He totally agreed, and the Secretary General said, "Oh, absolutely, yes, I know that person, and they'd have no problem."
So you're talking about, so obviously offering you some input into choosing the personnel for this in review and also the terms of reference.
Oh yes, we're going to have total involvement in the selection process of the personnel that's going to be taken in to do the review. And also we've been offered to go ahead and do the workshop that was mentioned with the Secretary General's meeting that we had last Thursday. She offered to set up a workshop for us with an outside facilitator for us to start the process of drawing up the terms of reference for this review.
You've said that you're disappointed that the outgoing Chief of Staff, Vice Admiral Mark Mellett, kind of more or less got out the gap. He's just retired. I think this week, actually, is his final week in position. That he left without acknowledging or in any way addressing this issue.
Yes, I did say that I was bitterly disappointed in that fact that he didn't acknowledge or apologise to us, because the abuse that's happening now has and still is happening on his watch until 23:59 tonight. He retires, so he still has time to apologise or make some statement if he wishes. We gratefully receive it.
As you say, we have an hour and 5 minutes for that statement to come in under his watch. I heard Cormac O'Hara asking you earlier, Karina, if you had felt, you know, frightened or intimidated, you know, when you decided to go ahead and do this. And of course, I have the privilege of knowing that we did discuss the consequences of breaking, you know, your silence and stepping out behind from behind protected disclosures. And I know that you and the others did feel the fear, but you did it anyway. How are you feeling today?
Yes, we're very happy that we did feel the fear and do it anyway. We don't feel that we've put ourselves too far out there. But we, you know, as far as our protective disclosures are concerned, we're still protected. I haven't named any names, and neither have any of the other females that have protective disclosures put in. So we just feel grateful that we've given the serving woman a voice. And this has made it all worthwhile that they can now tell their stories.
There's been false dawns before. You feels like, it sounds like you're confident that there was sincerity there today, and that you do believe the change is now coming.
We do believe that the change is coming, but you know, we will judge the minister on what he does and not what he says. So we will just have to wait. We'll wait and see.
Okay.
Like today was just a shot across the bow, and we haven't hit our target yet.
Okay, Karina, thank you. I'm just going to put that, before you go, I want to put that to our panel. Owen O'Brien.
Look, first of all, Karina and both the current and former Defence Forces personnel have come forward. Have not only acted bravely, but they've done a huge service. And I want to welcome the very positive response that they received from the minister today. That is a very encouraging sign. But what we now need to see is not just an independent review. It needs to be comprehensive. It needs to be thorough. It needs to be timely. This can't drag on forever. And crucially, it needs to hold all of those responsible for abuse, for covering up abuse, or for allowing complaints to disappear into nowhere, to be held to account. So this has to be more than just an endless review. People have to be held to account and punished for this. And there has to then be a sea change to ensure both the current and future women who serve in the Defence Forces never have to experience this again. We've a long history in this state of setting up reviews and setting up inquiries and tribunals that lead to decades-long campaigns of those affected. That cannot happen in this case. And I think all of the parties in the Dáil, irrespective of political allegiance, would work together for that objective. But the minister needs to lead that.
Kian O'Callaghan, very quickly, we're nearly out of time. I think that one of the focus of the campaign of the Women of Honour is this military justice system that can, you know, so often fails victims and re-victimises them.
Yeah, it's appalling. And this practice of people who've made complaints being cross-examined by people that they've made the complaint about is absolutely appalling. There's no place at all. Ministers should get rid of that straight away. So it is important to have the review. It is important that happens quickly. But we need action on things like that straight away. A lot of these issues have been known about for the last 20 years since Dr. Tom Clonan did his research and interviewed 60 women. So there is no excuse for inaction on this. We need the minister to... It is good that he's acknowledged this. It is good that he's apologised to him today, and we'll do that publicly as well. But we need action from him now on this. No more kind of excuses on this, or lack of action, as well as the review taking place.
Yeah, so does there need to be action ahead before? I mean, review, even with the best of intentions and the speediest of approaches, is going to take time. So are there issues that need to be dealt with right away, Paul McAuliffe?
Yeah, well, look, listen, Karina, I think, it's like many women in this situation, I'm very conscious I'm contributing here as a man. Victims talk about being believed and acknowledged, and I think some of that has happened today. But I think action is the third word I've written down. And that will have to follow a review, and we will only have to be able to judge the minister and the government by their actions when that happens. But I am pleased that Karina and her colleagues are pleased with the outcome of today, because that's what today was about. It was about acknowledging and believing people who would report that abuse.
Okay, Ciara, very quickly.
Yeah, I think what Karina mentioned there, and I applaud all those women for coming forward, just saying that, you know, that they need to judge the minister now on what he does and not what he says, and that there's full transparency and full cooperation for this review. And like Paul and Joaquin have said there, you know, it would be great to see an urgency and some changes that would come in place before this review takes place.
Okay, we'll have to leave that there. Karina, many, many thanks and very, very best of luck going, you know, with what's ahead of you and with getting the best possible review and terms in place to get the goals that you are, you know, that you're hoping for.
Okay, thank you very much, Katie.
Good
you
night.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, thanks, Karina. Good night. Okay, that's it. We're actually over time, so apologies. Our producer was Penny Hart. Research was Andrew Fleming, BCO Elaine Conlon, and Damien Channels was on sound. Stay tuned for Colin Murray on Late Date, but first over to Paul O'Neill on the Sports Desk.